Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
We are Dukes and Bell. Help us out if you're here at Hiram. Everybody's 5 minutes away. We start off every day and every hour by saying, hey, man. Thank you guys for hanging out with us out here at Buffalo's Cafe. Come on through, man. We'll be out here. Bagwell Parkway, Mike and Wendy Bagwell Parkway, should I say. It's been a great day, man, talking about all the things that are going on. Falcons front and center. If you missed Barbara Dooley, she was amazing again today. Told the story about her, how her and Vince met, 62 wonderful years, and then she told the story about how they turned the hoses on.
Yeah, man, going back to 1986. Mentioned Mark Schlabaugh's got a great article in ESPN.com talking about one of the crazier chapters in the great rivalry, the oldest rivalry in the Deep South, the best rivalry. You're going to compare Auburn, Georgia, to North Carolina and Virginia? I was get out of here. Yeah, so it's the best rivalry. But this is one that we mentioned, we'll get into a little bit later this hour. Some difficult matchups that Auburn, maybe on the defensive side, could present to Georgia's offensive line. We'll talk about it.
All right, man. Let's talk about the Falcons, Mike, because Monday night it's going down. It's a big game, not just because it's Monday night. We're coming off the bye. They're coming off of an L against the Patriots. And listen, we'll be up there tomorrow. I'm not sure what to expect from Ra when it comes to the main things that they changed. You've been saying it all week, and I hope they have addressed this. Special teams got to be better. I don't care who's on it. I don't care who's playing it. I don't care who's kicking it. As a whole, it's got to be a benefit for us. It cannot be a deterrent. And that's what it's been, Mike, the last three games. We're not just talking about the last game. Go back to the Carolina game. It was bad. We know that. Mike, flipping the field. Big kick returns. We gave up over 100 yards in kick returns against the Commanders in that game. And people, you know, we won the game, so it didn't feel that way. Better quarterback play, more playmakers on the field. We know they were shorthanded, but you can't do that in this game.
No, man. And we've talked about it with Marquise Williams, the special teams coach. He's been with this organization since 21. If you're going to hold him, and we'll ask Coach about it, because Ike Hilliard got fired after that Carolina game, whether that was simply scapegoating or, you know, things were that discombobulated, because we certainly had a much better effort against Washington. But, the special teams – and look, we're not the only team that has given up those big returns. Returns as a whole, starting field position is much better, because I think coaches, the players are still getting a handle on this. You know, Lord knows the fans still don't know what's going on with it, but we can't give Josh Allen the ball at the 45. Yep. You're right about that. Just talking to a couple of our dudes who came over from Douglasville, and these guys are big loyal listeners. We were talking about the defense, what do they think about Buffalo, and I just stumbled onto this talking with them. I said, you know, this is why we got Jalen Walker. I said, this is why we got James Pierce. And I just said to myself, self, you know who's only got 1.5 sacks right now?
Who?
Leonard Floyd. So he's a little below if he's going to get to 9, 8 or 9. You know, I mean, Leonard Floyd needs to get it in gear. That's a guy that, yeah, he's on a bit of a pitch count as a veteran, but there's a guy that maybe needs to have a big impact. I don't know what his experience are as against Josh Allen and the Bills.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's contain. You know, setting the edge is for the run game, contain is for the quarterback, but it's kind of like both with Josh Allen because the way he moves around back there.
Yeah, that's a good point. Flo, he's been in the mix. He's playing a lot. He's
sack
a lot
against Minnesota, half a sack against Command.
Getting a lot of snaps, but you're right. As far as just straight up sacks and pressures, I'd love to see him get and have a big night on Monday night. So Caden Ellis was talking about the Bills. A couple of things from him here on the show. It's Dukes and Bell Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. First of all, we know this defense hasn't peaked, but statistically, we laid this out for you. Falcon fans, we have one of the best defenses in the National Football League. May be hard to believe. You may not want to buy into it. We're top 10 against the pass. Total defense, number one. You start talking about the Bills, they're top 10 pass and rush. They got some guys, obviously, but we haven't talked about our defense in this way in a very long time. And Caden Ellis was like, look, we're playing pretty good, but we're not there yet.
Yeah, and what I think is cool is it hasn't even fully yet. Like, there's so much cool stuff that we've put on the field. There's so many great plays that guys have made. We've had great games. We've had good games. But, man, I just see elite and dominant games coming our way if we can continue to work and just attack the process every single week and continue to, you know, look in the mirror and see, you know, this is the vision that we have for this defense. Let's keep getting closer and closer. And if we do, we'll be special.
The defense is better. Jeff Ulbrich knows what he's doing. And when you drafted the guys you drafted, those were the complementary pieces that this defense needed. Mike, it's evident. Last year, Jimmy Lake did not know what he was doing.
No, he was in over his head. You know, how bad we looked at Minnesota game is probably the one that sticks out in your mind where we had dudes like, remember D. Alford like doing like a crab walk out there, you know, as Jefferson just takes it to the house. So you had a guy that wasn't qualified. Ulbrich is qualified. Ulbrich does know what he's doing. Now, how quickly do our rookies adapt? Because we're still a really young defense. You know, Divine Diablo we like. We just heard from Caden Ellis. But, you know, being aggressive. You said it. We talked about how the Patriots handled this. We're going to get more audio about Do we have the horses to go man-to-man with that secondary?
If A.J.'s healthy.
Otherwise, yeah, it's a – because fans, they'll call it on Tuesday and go, I hate this prevent defense. It's a zone. It's our version of cover two or three. But sometimes without the pass rush from your down lineman, it looks like a prevent defense.
So when you go man and you cover well, it makes things difficult on Josh Allen. And this is what the Patriots did the other night. Caden Ellis says they've watched the film. They know what the deal is. Now, you don't necessarily just run the same game plan out there because the Bills know where they lacked, and they'll change some things up. But he's right about this. Here's what he said about why the Patriots were able to beat these guys.
They, you know, their corners and their DBs had to stand up in man coverage, and that way the backers and, you know, safety, the D-line were really able to focus on stopping the run, stopping Josh Allen. And obviously they executed it. Their Bills still made plays because, again, the Bills have great players at receiver too, and at tight end, and at running back. Great pass catchers. You know, that looks like that's kind of what the Patriots did, and you know, we'll see what our coaches want to put together for how we play them.
He says stand up. You know, that's again covering guys 3, 4, 5, 6 seconds. Doesn't sound like a lot. Let one of your kids run around for 6 seconds. You try to stay with them. It's hard, man. But if you do it, Mike, he's right. Now Caden Ellis and Divine Diablo can focus. Josh is rolling out. We're here with you. We're watching you. You're not escaping us. Everybody's not turning their head and right. Running 20 yards, and then Josh Allen's down the field. Right. The Patriots did a great job of that.
Coverage sack. I mean, that's the thing. This is one where all those guys we drafted last year, you know, the Brandon Dorlesses, Ruka Ro, talking about, you just mentioned, you know, Pierce and Jalen Walker. This is where, I mean, if ever there's a game where these guys can – the Minnesota game – I don't want to – I'm not apologizing for a win, but J.J. McCarthy had no idea what the hell he was doing.
It's out of garbage.
You know, and they made that happen. They they created some of that. But you can't depend on Josh Allen making those kind of mistakes.
No.
So how athletic, how much can you do with scheme? And then the time of possession thing that Arch brought up yesterday, we and these guys hold the ball longer time of possession than almost anybody in the league. So turnovers are huge.
Yep.
Can't have any empty calories. Can't be settling for field goals because you might not see the ball as often as you'd like.
One other thing from Caden Ellis, guys, as we hang out here at Buffalo's Cafe. Tomorrow we'll be up at Flowery, and we'll have the interviews and all that exclusively here on Dukes and Bell as we do each and every week, getting ready for Monday night. What about how fast this defense has to play? This is something else Caden Ellis was talking about. If you really want to make an impact on this game, and I think this is something they've been discussing leading up to the start of this week.
You know, I'll leave that up to the coaches. Obviously, they're still working on the game plan. They'll get it to us here soon. But I think what a player can take of it is kind of what I was talking about earlier. We got a fast defense that plays round with a great effort. So let's attack. You know, when you got a shot on someone, when you got an opportunity to go make a play, go and make the Bills react to it. Try to put them on their heels and play aggressive and know that your brother's got your back.
Yeah. Look, and he said you got to take your shots. The big thing for me, I told Mike earlier this week, is tackling. If we look up Tuesday and we've got 13 missed tackles, we probably lost the game because that just means you're not wrapping Josh up. Whether it's James Cook too, Mike, it doesn't matter. These guys are elusive, man.
Yeah. Now, again, what does McDermott do looking at what we talk about the old Mike Smith phrase.
Self-scout.
We're going to self-scout. But, hey, man, how imaginative is Zach Robinson? We said this earlier. You know, I don't understand. All right, I'll say it one more time. Just start the season next time on the freaking sideline, okay? You should have used the preseason for that. But how imaginative, what is he going to throw at Buffalo that they haven't seen before? You know, Arch talked about yesterday, those, we loved it. Things you and I said we wanted to see, those stack formations.
Yes.
Pitts, I want to see Pitts be a bigger factor in this game. Continue to get the ball to Pitts. We were just talking to some of the listeners during the commercial break. Pitts is better this year. Whether it's healthy or he's engaged with his quarterback or whatever it is, I think he's still underutilized.
I do, too. Look, he's got a touchdown. I think, you know.
Contract year, too.
It is. He's going to.
Somebody, his agent might have told him a little extra effort in there.
But I think he's going to have one of these games. It'll happen. It may happen Monday. A couple of touchdowns, Mike. He's right there for it to happen. But I agree. I think he's playing a lot better. The other thing that's amazing is Pitts. When he's thrown to, he catches it. He is not dropping balls.
Nope.
Go look at his numbers, like 7 targets, 6 balls. 8 targets, 7 catches. That's what he's been doing all season so far. What's up, Day-Day? What you got?
So it's funny. We're talking about Pitts. So my daughter in our family fantasy league dropped Kyle Pitts over the weekend.
What?
Of the bye.
I'll claim it.
The bye. So talking about people overhearing you and stuff like that.
So
and the wife were riding. We're on our way to Memphis.
Yeah.
And I go, oh, shoot. Deja dropped Kyle Pitts. My wife, while driving the car, grabs her phone and tries.
She's ruthless. She's ruthless.
But we got the waiver wire, right?
Wow.
So I had to break it down to her. I said, well, you're fortunate. You're ahead of me in the waiver wire. This morning, waiver wire opens up.
Right.
The gentleman that I am.
You let her have it.
I text her and I said, get Kyle Pitts now.
You're so whipped.
And so she's like, but no, to the point about his production. She's like, well, is he good? And I'm like, is he good? I said, listen. Kyle Pitts has the potential to be that dude.
Yes.
All jokes aside, in this league, to your point, Falcons got to get him more involved in this offense. But yeah, I was a gentleman, and it's not being whipped.
You're
man.
Whipped, man.
Being whipped.
I've got you by the short hairs, man.
Listen,
hey, man.
It's not being whipped. It's like when I need that, when I get that tap on the shoulder.
All right.
When I give that tap on the shoulder.
Okay.
Yeah, remember when I told you to draft Kyle Pitts?
Yeah.
I'm helping you out.
Checks and balances.
I'm helping you out.
I hear that. Hey, man. No way to segue from that to the Hall of Fame, but D. Orlando Ledbetter. Thanks, Mike and Carl.
What's up, D. Ledbetter?
I wish I was in Hiram right now. Thank you, D. 5 former Falcons advancing in the Pro Football Hall of Fame seniors category.
Okay.
I know that for guys that of a certain age who saw Tommy Nobis, I never got to see Tommy play, but Tommy Nobis was the man. If you put Tommy Nobis in a Jets, Giants, I don't know, Bears uniform, he's probably in the Hall of Fame. But, you know, Atlanta was a much, much smaller market back in the, you know, in the 70s. But Chris Hinton, a guy, longtime Pro Bowler, great guy. Billy White Shoes Johnson, Mike Ken, longtime Pro Bowler. Clay Matthews Jr., Tommy Nobis make the next round. I've always felt the same thing goes for Jeff Van Note. One of the great guys, longtime broadcaster for the Falcons back on the day. But anyway, those are the guys at least have a shot for what it's worth. And maybe Nobis will get there posthumously.
I hope so. We say this about the Hall of Fame. Mike, you got to have lobbyists and people that talk about your story and how great you were. And if you don't have that, you're not getting in. If it's not blatantly obvious and you didn't play in New York, right?
Right. Big markets, big having those multiple voters, too, from multiple media outlets.
Correct. And so that's a story that has to be told, and somebody has to lobby for that. And that's been part of the problem with these great players that played in Atlanta. And I'm not saying that they're not. But when you guys go – all these writers go into the room, and they're like, hey, let me tell you about – and everybody's got to be there shaking their head like, okay.
Right.
And you start this momentum that eventually builds to a guy getting in.
Right.
Some players, guys, first ballot, you know, you just know who they are. You don't have to argue. When Tom Brady's name comes up, everybody's looking around the room and goes, all right, well, that's a no-brainer.
But Jeff Van Note was a Pro Bowler, played 16 years for the Jets. He's in. Done. That's a shame. I just know Noter, and that's one of those dudes we always lobby for. But, hey, man, that's the price of a smaller market. Hey, by the way, I just saw it today. We didn't get a chance to get it in the guy talk because it just happened. They caught that last escapee from New Orleans. You see this dude?
I didn't see him.
He blew a kiss when they put him in the APD car to the cameras.
I didn't see him, but I thought one of the best lines from my man G Money here, who does our on-site engineering. Everybody in New Orleans trying to get to Atlanta. This dude escaped jail and ended up in the ATL.
Is he off Campbellton Road? Where was
That's the best. It's so true. Yeah. So, no, man.
The only guy who's not 5 minutes from Hiram because he's in the back of the
it's true.
Popo right now.
Hey, man, coming up, serious questions, and I don't think he's going to last. I just don't. We'll tell you what that's all about when we come back here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, 2-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, look, this stuff I'm about to tell you cannot be confirmed, but I am going to tell you that I think this is what's going on at North Carolina.
Oh.
Because I don't think he was fully committed when he took the job. But the latest is, for those of you who don't know, Tar Heels are 2-3 overall, 0-1 in conference play. They have suspended their cornerbacks coach for impermissible benefits. Basically, he was providing tickets and sideline stuff for kids. In this day and age, you would think impermissible benefits, Mike, is a joke.
Right.
But
it's like, what's the old line? It's like giving away speeding tickets at the Indy 500.
Correct.
Right?
So that has happened. But this is what's being rumored. I don't start them. I just talk about them when they're out. So Belichick's communication with his staff the past 2 weeks has been considered and described as weird and distant. Reports of senior recruiting violations remain under investigation by UNC. But here's the kicker. And this is the one that I'm going, okay, he's certainly not committed. If in fact this is true, and again, various reports are out there, Bill Belichick has discussed a buyout option with North Carolina's hierarchy.
Okay.
And he signaled his willingness to trigger his own $1 million buyout if he can find a soft landing with another team or maybe back in the media. Now, I don't know, again, how true this is, but think about what's been going on. Jordan Hudson, his girlfriend, all the stuff. Hulu was about to drop some coin with them. They are out. Yes, we know Jordan. They didn't do the Hard Knocks thing. His team is terrible. Okay? They're one of the worst defenses in college football. When I say that, I mean it. Like, there's only 125 schools in FSB. They're like 110. There's a lot that's going on here, Mike. And the other part of it is his relationships internally apparently are deteriorating. We don't know if this is going to happen, but I'm just telling you what's out there, and it wouldn't surprise us if it did.
Article from the Boston Globe that dropped this morning. A report, Bill Belichick's UNC football is an unstructured mess with a divided locker room. Carl and I were talking yesterday, if you missed the show, TV station in Raleigh. And their 6 o'clock sports guy basically saying what he was hearing from players, that there's divisions to the Boston Globe story in the locker room. Guys are looking to transfer or just get out. And I wonder, because it brings it back to the Falcons just for a minute. What would it have looked like here? You know? I mean, to me, the whole situation, the way – because we just talked about, you know, how the quarterback situation, how Mac looks out there in San Francisco, right? Well, what would have happened if, you know, he was here? Would he have been so cavalier? Would Josh McDaniels have come with him as the OC? Or would he have tried to let his defensive coordinator coach our quarterback? You know what I mean? He lost his fastball in New England. Everyone wants to make this about, you know, Brady. And, yes, Brady obviously shows it was some Brady magic. But Belichick stopped drafting well. He missed on skill positions. He couldn't find a wide receiver if his life depended on it. So all of this, that's why I was lukewarm about him here. You know, I wanted a guy like Harbaugh. But now you and I said this. What was it? You're a Carolina fan. You think he's going to be there for 3 years? You got two years tops. And now the entire thing is unraveling. Look, the thing with him and the younger woman, that's his prerogative. God bless him. Mazel tov. But it for a guy that's life was so structured, it just looks like his life is just unspooling in front of our eyes in the last 18 months.
Yeah, and Mike, for me, it's not about the younger woman thing. You're right. That's his business. It's the fact that it's become a part of the narrative and the story much more so than it is about the football. That is the issue. Date whoever the hell you want.
Right.
Do what you want. But when it becomes what people care about more and she becomes the story, that's a distraction. That's what you're saying. There were no distractions in New England. He was not allowing these kinds of things to take place. So here's the deal. It's Dukes and Bell Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. When you start talking about a potential exit strategy, I'm here to tell you they're talking about a potential exit strategy.
And again, if you heard the show yesterday, there was a big article. We were talking about this article that came out. I think I want to say it was ESPN.com. Or was that, either way, it came out and it was basically saying how before Belichick even got hired in Chapel Hill, there was not a consensus. There was a divided house between their version, I guess, of the chancellor, the university president, the athletic director, and folks on the board of trustees who didn't want it and thought this was a bad idea. And now, I don't want to be like so, you know, cliche to say this is going to be a disaster, but you and I said it was a friggin' disaster before it even got off the ground. This was going to be a giant nothing burger. But I didn't think it was going to make it to the end of one season.
He may not even make it to week 6. I mean, the way this feels. And by the way, these rumors are being fueled by this now investigation. Look.
You can make that thing go any way you want.
If I want to get you got, I'm going to get you got.
So what, Bill Belichick is going to have a show cause from the NC2A?
No, I mean, but this is UNC saying this is being fueled by we have an ongoing investigation about, give me a break, about impermissible benefits from a coach and now you suspended. I mean, this is a joke. This is basically, this is not working. We'll cut you your check.
Right.
and wish you the best because we know your dad coached here and, like, there is a connection.
Yeah, when Eisenhower was president, right?
But this is not it. That's what UNC is basically saying. And I just want to see if they have the balls to follow through.
You were talking about this yesterday. You know, it's just so funny about Belichick and this blank show here is you expected Mac Brown to be treated with a little more class. And they show Mac Brown, look, maybe Mac lost his fastball. It's tough to go home again and go back to Carolina. But, I mean, Mac Brown brother, you're going to a decent bowl game. At the bare minimum, you got a bowl game with Mac Brown or you're 500. This isn't this disaster with Bill Belichick. So I never knew what the end game was for Belichick anyway. Other than he had no traction, he wants to get to the NFL and be the all-time winningest coach. And that's like, this makes that an impossibility, doesn't it? Or do you still think somebody would give him a shot?
Well,
to me, it's like, how can I hire a guy to be the face of my franchise, to be the architect, when his life is a disaster? Is everything just, like as I said, it's unspooling around him.
It feels that way, but we know how these owners work, and there are still a lot of owners who respect what he accomplished in the NFL, and they still think that he could potentially turn their team and their franchise into a winner. The fact that he's failing at this, he's not a failure yet because he's not been fired. Once he's fired, it's a fail.
Right. The thought being you could come in with the general manager and make this, because of NIL and the transfer portal, run like a pro team.
Pro team. But there are NFL owners who still go, look at what he did in the NFL, and he could definitely do that for me. I don't know if this is the end, but I just think, like, he's not a college dude. This is the thing that Nick Saban learned when he went to the NFL. Was like, this is cool, but this is not me. This is not what I'm great at. Then he goes to Alabama, and we see what happens. Belichick has never been a college guy, regardless of the rules or what's in place. I just feel like the NFL looks at him differently than college football.
But he was always a square peg in the college, to your point. And the funny thing is, he's probably this close. I got my fingers this close apart. He's on the boat. You know, he's on the SS Arthur Blank. You know, Arthur, I wonder if the girl was with him too, Carl. Oh, Bill, well, I see you brought your daughter with you. Very nice.
I don't know.
Oh, your niece.
I don't know if that
either
happened,
way.
But I do know what happened.
Right.
Is he blew it.
Well, and I do think I still think Arthur gets on the phone with Bob Kraft, and Bob Kraft says he's lost his fastball, Arthur. You don't want to get in bed with Belichick. That's what I think happened.
Yeah.
You know, and not to mention, look, if we're going to be honest, all of the people that surround Arthur Blank knew their jobs were gone if Belichick came in. So he's probably getting that in place. Regardless, I wasn't interested in Belichick. We had a lot of fans at that time. Now, Raheem Morris has still got to prove that he's worthy of this hire, because that last year was, again, a mess, and some of this was on Kirk Cousins. But Raheem is still, in the minds of a lot of fans, not as good an option as Belichick would have been. Has that changed the minds of any of the fans now, seeing this disaster? Or is it apples to oranges because it's the college game?
Look, I
don't know what Bill's staff was going to look like here.
I told you guys way back when that Belichick wasn't getting his job. I said he wasn't the guy. He wasn't going to get this job. He didn't get the job. This was more than just about him being the face of the franchise. This was about team building. That's an area where he had failed. And when you get into, all right, what was he post-Brady prior to that, when he was building teams and in his best, like, there was just and he had a lot of brain power, Mike. We forget all the general managers and assistant general managers that
Scott Pioli, Dimitroff off that tree.
That left that building, that were in those conversations to help Belichick build those teams. But this was about team building. Belichick just being the coach is one thing. You still got to build a team. You still got a draft. For everybody's killing Terry Fontenot, this last draft looks pretty damn good, doesn't
it? Last two now.
Looks pretty damn good, doesn't it? That's where he was lacking when you talk about the football stuff. Yeah, he can be a head coach. And then you go to college, Mike, and you say, well, he's a great defensive mind. His college team's going to be one of the best defensive teams in the country. They're not. His son is running the defense. Why?
His son's got 1 year as a defensive coordinator. That was at the University of Washington. And again, I look at Belichick and those last few years in New England. I mean, how much hubris, that's ego for those who, you know, is to say, I'm going to take a guy who's never coached quarterbacks, I'm going to take my young developing quarterback and stick a defensive coordinator and an egomaniac special teams coach and see if he can fix. That's not the way things work. So that's why, that was my argument against Belichick 2 years ago. And man, and the other thing is, guys are like, people on the text line, well, why are you guys so excited? Because he treated people like crap. Bill Belichick, there's karma. The boomerang comes around. You know, for all the stuff he pulled with the media, and look, I get it. Some of the media deserves it, some doesn't. But at least have some degree of treating people like human beings. And when things are going, when he was running back to back, he could be that guy. Now he just comes off looking like a jerk.
Oh, when you're winning, you can do those things.
Exactly.
When you're not, this is what happens. Hey, man, we're live at Buffalo's Cafe. Not telling it's going to happen, but it probably is. We're coming back. We got more to get to here. Stay right there. It's Dukes and Bill.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, join the morning shift special broadcast at Publix at Buckhead Landing in Atlanta. Come down, join the crew, and pick up your favorite tailgating supplies for the weekend, guys. It's brought to you by Publix. Feed your fandom. Feel the hype this year with Publix. That's Friday, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. at Publix at Buckhead Landing in Atlanta, right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. A couple of things going on in the NFL. Brock Purdy, Mike, did not practice again today. Looks like Mac Jones may get called upon again.
He was pretty good last time.
He was. Also, we mentioned this as we started the show, and it's just kind of weird when you talk about Joe Flacco going to the Bengals. They've wasted no time. Named him the starter. He's going to start against the Packers on Sunday, so that'll be something to watch and see where that goes with the Falcons playing on Monday night. And the Browns have yet to say Shedeur Sanders is, in fact, the backup.
Yeah, I don't get this disconnect, you know, with Kevin Stefanski. He also was trying to deflect questions about Deshaun Watson potentially starting in 2025. I think most people around the NFL felt they just simply get rid of Deshaun Watson, eat what's left on the contract, and close that book. But he was kind of, you know, the mum's the word on that. Yeah, this is one that, and you and I joked around about this yesterday. I'll never understand, you know, how it went the way it did. Because what's the purpose of all these draft experts who had, you know, and remember, Mel Kiper was losing his mind on draft night, and Shedeur Sanders fell like a turd from heaven, you know, all the way to the fifth round. But, you know, I just want to see what the kid can do.
Yeah.
Because I saw him extricate himself from tremendously difficult situations in Colorado without an offensive line and deliver the ball accurately and on schedule. So that's got to be a skill set that translates at some level. But first things first, we're going to have to go see Dylan Gabriel, right? And then eventually maybe we'll see Shedeur. But they won't even mention him as the backup. They're talking – I mean, they won't even list him as the number two right now officially, to your point.
It's crazy. Ravens look like they might be without Lamar again, fantasy players. Lamar did not practice today. And for those of you who missed it yesterday, we really didn't talk about it, but – Ravens traded one of their former first-round picks,
right.
Adafe Owe, goes to San Diego. This is, remember, the Harbaughs.
Right.
The San Diego Chargers general manager came from the Ravens, so they're not trying to get over on each other. I think this is a need. They need secondary help. That's the Ravens. They need pass rush help. That's the Chargers. So they made a trade yesterday, but you don't see these kind of trades, Mike, but the Ravens edge rusher really wasn't having a big impact.
Interesting. And then with Big Chuck Smith trying to push the buttons, and a Big Chuck Smith, Joe, can't get it out of you. Maybe it's time to move on. I wonder if Day-Day's wife is going to claim him off waivers, but Derrick Henry in some fantasy leagues, some guys are saying, I read an article in CBS Sports today that said you bench Derrick Henry until week 8.
What?
Because he's going up against some really tough defenses.
Yeah.
And if Lamar Jackson's not healthy, they just stop the run. And that means Derrick Henry's just kind of become marginalized, which some people felt, you know, oh, he's going to fall. I mean, I hate those people when they're right. Those fantasy experts say, well, Derrick Henry, all that workload, he's going to fall off a cliff. And it's kind of happening, you know?
Well, he got
the turnovers hurt too. That kind of got him, you know, out of some big situations.
He got past 30, though, and he's not had any fall off, right? That's the thing with Henry. He can still tote the rock.
But without a healthy Lamar Jackson, they can stack the box.
They can. No, that's true. All right, let's talk about something that really got us going today.
I know this is going to get our studio audience here live at Buffalo's hot.
Well,
because these are a bunch of alpha males in this room, Carl.
So Jonathan Gannon is the head coach of the Cardinals. We mentioned this. He was fined. They called it an altercation. It wasn't. He was basically getting a player straight. But they called it an altercation. So they fined him $100,000, basically, for this sideline altercation with Amari DiMarcado, the running back who dropped the ball before he entered the end zone. And so, you know, we got into this discussion for those of you who are just joining us, and we were saying, my thing with this is, what is a coach supposed to do when he's upset and you've basically lost another game? It wasn't – all these games haven't been his fault, but you're trying to minimize mistakes. And I can't tell one guy on the team, Mike, you do your job and it's okay for you to fumble at the goal line because you want to clown around and do some kind of crazy dance. and not have some kind of a discipline
right.
involved with that.
Gotta be consequences.
Gotta be.
And that's the thing. We talked about it earlier, and a couple guys agreed with us. We had a couple guys on social media going, oh, you guys got to get over this thing. No, man, you got to have personal accountability. And I do think you got to follow the situation in Arizona. Yes, the organization's kind of a mess historically, but you got a quarterback who sometimes feels like he's above it all.
Yep.
He got Cliff Kingsbury fired. You know, whether you believe what's been written or not, fair or unfair, about Kyler Murray. But you got a team that's undisciplined, making mistakes. So this guy does the stupidest of stupid things. It's bad enough if your kid does this in high school or college, let alone if it's DeSean Jackson or anybody else who's done this, which is, again, it's the NFL. You just cost yourself a 7-point advantage. It was 28-6.
That's right.
He drops the ball. That's a touchback. Then, of course, you have the interception, fumble, touchdown for the Titans. And next thing you know, you've blown another game. You blew a 21-6 lead that should have been 28-6. So for Gannon, by the way, Gannon didn't clothesline him like Woody Hayes in the Gator Bowl back in the day. He didn't take his helmet off and smack him over the head with it, which my coach, Snetofsky, would have done while blowing Marlboro smoke into my face without a water break. He just walked up to him and he yelled at him and he brushed by him. That's it. I don't know if the Arizona was afraid the Players Association was going to push this thing, but the guy was he made a stupid mistake. There's got to be a penalty for doing something stupid. And he shouldn't be the guy spending paying $100,000 for doing anything any other coach would do.
Yeah.
I don't know. To me, it's just soft. It's 2025 softness.
Yeah, and by the way, DeMarcado didn't ask for this. This is the Players Association, the team, and the visual of it. So if he does this in the locker room when nobody else is around and the cameras aren't around and the microphones aren't around, is this okay? It probably is, right? But because he did it on the sideline and everybody's like, did you see
he
that?
He swiped an arm. It was like a drive-by swipe of an arm. He didn't dislocate the guy's shoulder. He didn't put him in a suplex and drop him on top of the Gatorade cups. He just went, blankety-blank, what the blank are you doing, blankety-blank, rumpf. And he walked back to where he was on the sideline.
Yeah.
To me, it's like a nothing burger. But again, people are like, oh, my God. He was like yelling at him. And there was like contact physically. What is going on in the world? Because I just think people, to me, the punishment was certainly was accurate and it was proportionate to the crime. Because the crime was an incredible mental mistake.
Yeah. And look, here's the other part about this. Like, y'all are like, y'all need to calm down. This is how coaches lose their jobs.
Correct.
And these NFL jobs don't come around like every day. So if I have somebody that needs correcting, needs discipline, needs accountability,
right.
I'm going to do that because I don't know if I'm going to get another shot. Like Gannon, Jonathan Gannon hadn't won enough to just be like, well, I'll be hired next week.
Right. This is probably one shot to be a head coach.
This is it. So
and his team has got a bunch of guys like this.
That's so, the reason why when you're like, hey, you guys are taking this too far. It happens all the time. Guys are cool with it. No, guys aren't cool with it.
And by the way, that's another thing. Revisionist history on this. There were guys that would get their arm around him. Hey, buck up, buddy. Other guys were yelling at him. You had other guys going, you stupid blankety blank before Gannon got in there.
Yeah.
Because they were upset too.
It is kind of funny when you see the footage. It was like one guy was holding up on his shoulder, right? Like he had him on his shoulder. Yeah, he was like, man, it's going to be all right. Come on. It's ridiculous.
I mean, and again, I saw Armando Salguero, who we talk to all the time from Miami, who's is syndicated, and he was going, look, don't do that. If you're that upset, just cut the guy. Well, no, he showed the ability to bust a big run.
No, he's talented.
He's talented, but I mean.
That talented guy sometimes needs discipline. Not that you cut him.
Right. Sometimes you need a hug. Sometimes you need a kick in the butt. That was at least our experience in youth. And I think, okay, maybe I'm not the good example. Most of us turned out all right.
Yeah, dude, I the whole cut him thing is great. But also, Jonathan Gannon knows talent wins in the NFL. Guys, he was the defensive coordinator when the Eagles won a few years ago, when they went to the Super Bowl, okay? Right. Actually, they didn't win. They lost. And then he got a head coaching job. And then they went back last year and obviously won with Jalen. But he understands that. You don't get to those opportunities without talented players. You just need to tell guys what's up. And I thought he told him perfectly. I just think this fine was excessive, Mike, and it was really – this is the visual of 2025
right.
at play.
Right. Everybody's soft. You're soft out there, you guys.
Why are you pointing to Tinker?
Not Tinker. Tinker, like Randy McMichael, who's born hard. He's an HVAC man. He's in there, man. He's in attics and crawl spaces with varmints and all. So he's tough.
Yeah.
No, but, you know, the thing about, you know, the whole scenario, and it drives me crazy, is just it's a thing now. Everything now.
What's a thing?
Oh, he brushed his arm. I could – the things that Coach Natofsky and Coach Peterson – granted, I was an idiot – that they did. Remember our buddy Dave, they would twist – I got my face – how many times you have your face mask twisted?
Tons.
To the point where I'm at a 90-degree angle with the ground. I'm like, okay, Coach. I mean, that's – I mean, I guess if people get that stuff on video – and I'm not equating this with the Bobby Knight thing because you can't choke a guy. I mean, I know there's a line, but brushing an arm against the guy, you can't – guys are comparing this to Bobby Knight. It's not even the same – not in the ballpark. It's not in the same, like, universe.
This is where I may differ with many of you, and you might be like, man, that's so old school. Football's a physical game. Coaches who coach physical, that's just what it is. And I can't tell you to go out there and take a guy out, take a head off,
right,
work as hard as you can all week, and then that's just not how this works. So when I call it coaching hard, I don't call it abuse.
Right.
Right. That's what's changed. People go, oh, that's abusive. Really? Okay. These coaches, and I think it's not everybody, but sometimes, man, that plays. This is a physical game. You can't be in professional wrestling and have thumb matches. You just can't do that. You got to go out there and you're practicing these moves, Mike, and it's a physicality to it. That's what goes on in the NFL. So I don't have any problems with it. If you guys are like, y'all are tripping, then I'm tripping.
Hey,
because
I'd
love to see more of this.
Right, and one last wrap this up and we'll move on. It's such a stupid act to drop the ball the millisecond you break the plane. We just talked about Billy White Shoes Johnson. In the old days, you took the ball in the end zone.
And then performed.
And you did something with it. Or if you remember like Drew Pearson or Lynn Swann or Stallworth, remember how they would put the ball over their shoulder? But they'd be in the end zone like 3 seconds.
Yeah.
And it looked cool. This isn't cool. I didn't understand, like, yeah, I'm going to time this the millisecond the ball breaks the plane. I'm going to drop the ball. What the? What? I don't need. Sound like, you know, now I sound like Clint Eastwood at Gran Torino.
What are you talking about?
Get off my lawn. I just don't understand why you guys do it.
All right, you guys can let us know what you think. First of all, I want to thank everybody out here for coming out, hanging out with us at
Give Buffalo. Yourself a round of applause,
Appreciate
people.
You guys, man. We love you guys. And we'll be back out here. We've been making our rounds to all the Buffalo's cafes. We've been up there in Cumming, Mike. We were up there Lawrenceville. We went up to Flowery Branch.
Right.
So we'll be back out this way fairly soon. So make sure you tune in and know what's going on. Also, tomorrow we're at Flowery Branch. Speaking of being up there with Coach, we'll have Coach Ra on exclusively.
And Wes
Drewham. Player segment as well. We'll grab a player to find out what they're thinking about this matchup with the Bills. One of our listeners earlier said, man, I was listening earlier. I'm not afraid of the Bills. We shouldn't be.
Do your job. I mean, look, it's about Josh Allen. We all know that, getting him on the ground. He's going to get his. But, I mean, we can't have – what are we? I think a lot of Falcon fans also don't know what our identity is.
Yeah,
you talked about it. We're running the football. We like our defense, a ball-hawking defense. But the Carolina thing just still is lingering. I mean, this national TV, hopefully we come out and we show the physicality. And all those young guys we talked about these last two drafts –
come out and play, yeah. Right. Mike Griffith from Dog Nation is going to join us. We'll talk some more dogs.
That Auburn game is scary, man.
Well, look, you're not better than them up front right now. That's the fear. And if the Dogs win, is it going to surprise me? No. But if Auburn makes this a game and it's close, and you know how that crowd can get, Mike, and how loud it can get there, it may be a big challenge for the Dogs. I'm looking forward to seeing how they come out and play. Can't get caught sleeping at the wheel. You beat Kentucky, whoop-de-doo.
Right.
You got to go play Auburn. This is a different animal right here. All right, more on that tomorrow with Mike Griffin. Guys, we got to get out of the way and clear our throat. All right, Turtle's got the night show. Wasn't sure because sometimes he gets impeded, I guess you could say, by
he gets bumped by sometimes.
Yeah.
Last night we had the coaches show with Arch and
Coach.
But
he's got a full show tonight, so stay tuned. Turtle, by the way, people were out here asking about you. It wasn't all good either. I'm going to tell you right now, all right? It was not all good. But he'll be on at 6.
Wow.
Well, remember the guy comes in. He goes, where's Bill? I was like, he's right there.
Where's Turtle? Turtle's too negative on the Falcons.
That's what he said. I was like, he's on after us.
Turtle, he's right now by the speaker. His word's not ours, Turtle.
Yeah, I was like, you can talk to him later. So he's got the full night show coming up, man. Tomorrow we're looking forward to talking to Coach and everybody up there, Flowery, and starting to really focus in on the Bills. Lots of that conversation coming your way. G. Gordon, man, appreciate you. G. Money, as always, our on-site engineer. Thanks to Day-Day Executive Producing back at the studio, Big O. And thanks to all of you guys for coming out and hanging out with us. We appreciate you. All right, Mike Bell, we got to get out of the way, man. Clear your throat.
Hey, man, I caught Allen Iverson on TV this morning on First Take promoting his new book called Misunderstood. Talked about the lowest point in his life. Wasn't on the basketball court. It was when his wife divorced him.
Mm.
And back in the day when we used to hang out at the Palm and Buckhead, we would see Allen Iverson in there a million times. Me, I was talking to G about this. And Al would have his crew with him. And he had a house like down the street. But he'd have like guys in hotel rooms right there. It's like just burning through money. He was always cool, always accessible, fun to talk to and stuff. But you always felt like, what's he doing? Well, he talks about that and where he's at. It's great to see the man is sober, got his life in gear, because he was always so much fun to watch on the floor.
What's it called? Misunderstood?
Misunderstood.
It's perfect.
Right?
It is. When Allen Iverson came into the league, guys, he changed the NBA. He just did. And, like, for those who don't know or didn't watch, the image, the clothes, everything. And right. He was a hell of a player. I actually want to check the book out and check it out and read about it. Hey, Bill Belichick, as we leave you today, has discussed buyout options with North Carolina hierarchy.
Oof.
These are the reports. He has signaled a willingness to trigger his own $1 million buyout if he can find a soft landing. Don't know what that means. Here's what it means. This didn't work.
Is he going to go coach flag football with Brady in Saudi Arabia?
I don't know. By the way, we don't know if it'll happen or not, but the fact that they're even discussing it tells you everything you need to know. Mm. Hey, if you love the show,
you tell your friends.
If you don't,
you're going to meet your friends at the Waho.
Serving good food fast, this Southern favorite is known as Waho for short. AJ, where's a Waffle House? That's it.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.